UNICEF Australia acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we live and work, and pay our respects to the ancestors who cared for this country and the elders who continue to today. Young people have a lot to say, and it's time we listen. Welcome to Next Gen, a UNICEF Australia podcast that gives young people a platform to speak up on issues they care about. Every episode, I pass the mic to experts and young people as we discuss everything from climate change to mental health and inequality. I'm Ray Johnston, ambassador for UNICEF Australia, STEM journalist, TV presenter, podcaster, and climate champion. Over four episodes, I will be speaking with experts and young voices about climate change. What is it? How is it affecting young people? And what UNICEF Australia is doing about it? From West Sydney to West Pakistan, climate change is not a tomorrow problem. It's the greatest threat facing children right now. In our third episode, I'm chatting to Felicity from Royal Far West, which is a partner organisation of UNICEF working to deliver mental health support to country kids. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we also have Takisa, who featured on episode two and has experienced bushfires in her hometown.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for coming back. The 2019-2020 Black Summer bushfires, they're an experience that none of us will ever be able to forget. There was a catastrophic 19 million hectares of land burnt. More than 3,000 homes were burnt. Tens of thousands of people were displaced. Takisa, you were personally impacted by those devastating fires. Can you talk us through your day leading up to the fires?
Yeah, firstly, I'd like to acknowledge that this is my personal story, and I acknowledge that there was other individuals that were more impacted than myself, and acknowledge that every single person, I think, across Australia was actually impacted by those fires. So I guess leading up to the fires, I live probably 10Ks away where this fire started, and this ended up being a pretty big fire and taking out entire villages along the south coast. Leading up to it, we were on high alert. We knew there was smoke, and I wouldn't say there was one specific day, because in the end, we were fighting fires for up to 2 weeks and, you know, concentrating on all different areas in our community.
So did you have any clue of what was to come?
Yeah, like obviously when there was no fire, we didn't even think about it. It was summer, so we're probably just enjoying, you know, our summer down at the river, working at the local blueberry farm where me and my siblings work. But we did know when it was about to hit, you know, the property, because I guess living rural, you always are on alert of natural disasters. And, you know, obviously you can see the smoke and you know when it's going to hit.
Yeah, the colour of the smoke changes. You can hear the wind as well. Mm. You can hear that fire, can't you?
Yeah, definitely. And, yeah, you can even tell the animals know before humans know. And I think that's a really, you know, intel of what's coming. You know, you just see more animals kind of arrive up near, like, the house and onto the, like, grass area that we have in front of the house as well.
So how did it all unfold?
Yeah. So I guess obviously it wasn't one day. And it's actually 4 years ago today that on our property we had a strike team, about 8 RFS vehicles rock up. And then within half an hour they set light to like half of our property.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was a really shocking experience because, one, it was like our favorite part of the property. And like, you know, we didn't have a say if we wanted it to be burnt. It was like they're coming in, they're burning this part of the property to avoid the bushfire coming. And then they left while the fire was still going. So that was, you know, a really stressful time. We were sitting on the balcony and I've never seen anything like it. Like you could just see from the balcony and then we kind of have a hill, like a downhill, and then just like a bunch of forest. And the whole forest was just red, like as far as we could see. And then, yeah, then they left and all of the RFS ended up getting evacuated from our part of the area. And they said, you either go now or you're going to be stuck here for the entire, you know, rest of the fire, depending on how long it goes. And as a family, we decided to stay, not only, you know, to protect our own home, but also to protect our neighbors' homes and also our forest. We are so deeply connected to that forest that we wanted to protect as much as it, like, of it as we could. And then that's when, so, you know, that day, it's kind of, yeah, a bit tricky to remember exactly the play-by-play, because obviously it was a very long period of time with not much sleep and talking. So I had one of my brothers, my sister and my dad, we were all out there during this time, and we just decided we're going to leave our house because, you know, we had a bit of grass around it, so we thought, yeah, we should be fine. And then went to the neighbor's house and started checking, because some of them did decide to leave, so we kind of were doing property checks around the place. And then there's also the local blueberry farm that I talked about, and obviously if we lost the blueberry farm, that's an entire income gone, and some of these trees over 30 years old. So then we spent the next week just fighting fires there, trying to keep them off the blueberry plants. There was, like, I would say the most scary time during the fires was we were kind of in this back corner and it was, like, getting pretty hectic. Oh, and I was 17 at the time, and then my younger sister was 16. So we're quite young, and obviously daddy's very concerned for our safety as well, but we kind of had the job that needed to be done. And then my boss and, like, neighbor and friend kind of just went into the bush and didn't come out for, like, half an hour.
Oh, wow.
And everyone was, like, so concerned. And then, you know, finally they came out. And, yeah, we ended up calling 000 in that instance, and no one came. We heard that, you know, maybe someone's going to come, maybe they're not. But we were left alone. And I guess, you know, we do take some of that responsibility because we did decide to stay. But at the time, it felt, you know, very lonely to be out in the forest. Like, you know, we're literally in a very dense forest. Most of it is New South Wales, like run by New South Wales Forestry. So not much is, like, upkept in terms of fire management. But often people, the one question that I get asked about the fires was I glad I was there, or would have I rather been in town, I guess, like, in the safety of a larger community? And I would say no, I wouldn't have wanted to be in town, because at least when I knew I was out there, I knew where most, like, all of my family. Obviously, there were some in town. My mum, who's a nurse at the local hospital, was obviously working 24/7 at the local hospital. And then my brother doesn't live at home anymore. Well, at that point, didn't. And, yeah, I would, if, like, we had to choose and make that decision again, I think I would have done the exact same, because I knew that, oh, yeah, there's my brother, there's my sister, and I didn't have to worry about trying to get in contact with them.
Thank you for sharing all that with me. We've got remarkably similar stories of that time, actually. So it's really nice to hear your perspective on it and understand that the feelings that I had at that time, caused by the same kind of factors, are appropriate feelings to have at that time. I think, you know, the loneliness, and also I think one of the things that people don't really discuss, I don't know if it was the same for you, but because you're fighting the fires, or you know, working with the fire, or, you know, trying to just get rid of the embers basically as they land and stop them from turning into bigger fires, you have to do that in shifts. You can't let it go while everyone has a nice sleep overnight. So did you also have members of your family staying up in the night watching out for embers?
Yeah, definitely. There was this one night that my dad and older brother went to check on a neighbor's property. It was, like, it was pitch black but also light at the same time because of the fire. And then they, like, didn't come back for a really, really long time. And we're like, oh, we're going to have to get up and go check on them. And then we went down there, and there was a tiny home on that property, and the fire was, like, right next to this tiny home. And then Dad and my brother are continuing to fight this fire, and it was like, how much effort are we going to put into saving this one asset? And as soon as me and my sister got there, we went and checked on them, and then my dad was just like, leave, like, you're not staying here, and you have to get back to the neighbor's property just so that that like we were out of danger. And I think he was really stressed at that point. There was also another point that my sister got like a little bit burnt. It wasn't a serious burn, but there was like embers falling on her. And that was also when Dad like kind of stepped into action, was like, you guys like really have to like not get that close to the fire. And so I think, you know, it would have been very scary for my dad to have, you know, three of the kids out there fighting these fires.
For us, after the fires had stopped, the property became a bit of a wildlife refuge. You know, we had such a big influx of birds and mammals all, you know, hiding out there basically. They had nowhere else to go. What was life for you in the aftermath of the fires?
So we have a really interesting story with after the fires, and not just like the immediate after the fires, but like about the 3-month mark, and obviously still everything really recovering at that point. And New South Wales Forestry is obviously a New South Wales government corporation, and they log our forest. And less than 3 months after those fires, they came in and started logging our forest. Yeah. So 85% of the forest got burnt, and they were logging what didn't get burnt. And I think that really hit the community, because obviously, you know, we tried so hard to protect the, like any of the bushland. And then we had that same thing where the wildlife was just going into any part that wasn't burnt. And then to see, you know, trucks roll in and just take tree after tree after tree. And when I say like bits were burnt, it was like, they're still sticks today, and this is 4 years ago. And that, I think, well, for me, that was harder than the actual fires itself. And I think, like, hard for a lot of the community, because that's when, you know, you're really supposed to be coming together as a community and, you know, debriefing about these fires and trying to move on. But we couldn't. We were stuck in a state of destruction. And until this day, they've been logging every single day except weekends and public holidays since those bushfires.
That's unbelievable. I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
I would love to hear from you if you feel like life even has a chance to return to normal when that sort of destruction is continuing to happen.
Yeah. I don't want to use the word normal. I think a new normal, maybe. Like, life will never return to what it was before the bushfires, both like in terms of environmentally, in terms of the community. There are still like so many mental health issues in our small community. We're probably only a community of, you know, less than 30 people. We live on pretty large properties, pretty spread out. And yeah, I would say the community isn't back to normal since those fires. Relationships broke in the community during the fires and post-fires. And, you know, at the moment, especially while we're talking, people are so scared for what's coming in the near future.
Understandably.
Yeah. And to touch on, you know, the child kind of aspect of this, we have a few children that live in our community, and there's these like two young, beautiful children. They're probably like under six, both of them. So forestry sometimes burns the bush after they log it. And they started burning without telling these neighbours. And these kids were like distraught, because they like, you know, grew up with this trauma at such a young age of these fires.
Yeah.
And then now they're also seeing the logging of our forests. And the mum of these two kids was talking to me, and one of the young kids was like, oh, we really want to do something about this. We want to, you know, somehow write a letter to, you know, our leaders. But they said, oh, well, we can't write it on paper. Like, these kids were just the sweetest, because that's obviously our trees. So they have this whole idea of like writing all these letters on the like leaves and then giving it to politicians. So I think it's really important to understand that kids are seeing this, and they really are impacted. And we kind of underestimate the power and the knowledge that young kids hold. And I think, it's really important that we really lift their voices up when they want to share.
Giving them that voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
UNICEF is always there before and during and after an emergency in more than 190 countries, making sure that every child lives in a clean and healthy and sustainable environment today and in the years to come. And even before disaster strikes, children need measures that reduce their risks of harm and support a resilient recovery as well. So we work on vulnerability mapping, multi-hazard early warning systems, comprehensive disaster management strategies, and post-disaster needs. We also help governments build their capacity to strengthen social services and infrastructure to reduce the impact of disaster. Felicity, how is UNICEF's partnership with Royal Far West designed to help the community?
Yeah, Ray. So our work has evolved from an initial partnership between Royal Far West and UNICEF, which initially started in 2020. Mm-hmm. And so the Royal Far West Community Recovery Service has grown to respond to the increasing demand for support for children in over 60 communities impacted by cascading disasters across New South Wales and also in Queensland. So we've continued to work very closely together in our advocacy work, highlighting the impact of disasters on children and young people, and really importantly, sharing what we learn to strengthen the child voice. But more recently, we've also worked with UNICEF and partnered with them to complete a floods needs assessment in Queensland in 2022, and also for a floods needs assessment in Fitzroy Crossing in 2023. So our program that's developed is a really flexible and adaptable program. And what we know is that the needs of the community, for each and every community, their recovery process is really individual and different. So our program is able to be really flexible and adaptable because we have a multidisciplinary health team, which consists of occupational therapists, speech pathologists, social workers, and psychologists. So we're able to draw on the expertise and the skills of this whole team to meet the needs of each community.
Yeah, it's a really multifaceted team you've pulled together there. So what led you to realising that you needed to have that kind of multi-pronged approach?
Yeah, so as we work with each community, we've really taken the time to listen and work really closely with them to work out what supports and services are able to help them in their recovery process.
Yeah.
And needing to draw upon the skill sets and expertise of lots of different health professionals.
What has been a strength that you've seen in these communities since disasters have happened within them?
A huge strength that we've been able to see within the communities has been that relationship building. Mm. For many of the communities that we've been working with since 2020, we have been able to go back into the communities multiple times. So some of the communities we've revisited 2, 3, 4 times back into the community. And we've really been able to see a lot of the skills that we've been implementing with the children, with their educators and with their families, seeing that growth and development. And so that wraparound support around the children has really grown and we've seen that strength build.
Takisa, do you feel like your community is in a better place to deal with a future disaster?
Mm. Well, that's a good question. I guess when I talk about our wider community, so if we include more the town centre rather than where I live quite remotely, I would say a lot of work has been done since the bushfires to help people be more better equipped, I guess. But when we look where we live rurally, we're at the same point where we're going to be fighting fires without support potentially. And I guess because we have been through it before, we do, I guess, have a bit more understanding. And I guess it might have been the last podcast actually that we were talking about how already this season we do have, you know, our cars set up with the water tanks and the pumps ready to go already. And so we are definitely on high alert. However, with climate change and any natural disaster, I don't think anyone can be fully equipped because we don't know what's going to come. We don't know how big these disasters are going to be. I guess we've touched a lot about, you know, bushfires, but Another thing that we have been facing on the South Coast are floods. Personally, so to get home, we have to cross a river, and it's the only way to get home. And since the bushfires, we've been either stuck at home or out of home about 20 times. And so it's just like small things like that. And we wouldn't know what to do if a flood lasted for an extended period of time, how we would get food in or out. And it's the same with the bushfires, because we do live, like, there are a couple ways to get in, but because we are so remote, we can get, you know, blocked off from the local town and community. But I guess what we have learnt from the last fire is that together with community, we can actually help fight these natural disasters and come together and work together to help each other out.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that with me, and thank you both for chatting with me.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
And that does bring this episode to a close. Thank you so much for listening. If there's any more information that you would like about anything we discussed in this episode, check out our show notes. You will find more info and links there. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, leave us a review and a rating. It helps other people find the show. Thanks again.